October 31st, 1987, meeting of the Nameless Ad Hoc Committee on Collecting Indian History, held at Chickahominy Tribal Center, Charles City, County, Virginia.
When that started, and they say I'm the host, so I'm going to have to do some hosting. I wanted to make a couple of announcements first. We don't want you to feel that we're shoving you around, but our children in the back rooms, in the classrooms, that doing that pottery and bead work and everything, and they will leave at 1, so we will probably go in one of those rooms back there, because we have an activity for the children here tonight, and they'll be coming in at 1 to fix up for the activity for the children tonight, so don't feel like we're pushing you around, but we're using it to the best of our advantage today. And I'd like to know what time you want to eat lunch.
Why don't we combine it with the move time? Okay. And take a break, and then we can simply reconvene in another room. Does that sound reasonable?
Sounds good.
How long
so
ago
right
we
now sounds fine
about
with me.
Here, I thought maybe the host would offer us a cup of coffee, but I didn't know he was going to serve us lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, y'all don't. Eating meeting.
Eating meeting.
Yeah,
eating.
Yeah, that's why you got a good crowd.
Yeah,
we heard about it.
Well, now when Helen Trevab was in, they said they wanted to make her cornbread.
Yeah, that's why I told you somebody else would call me, my wife and daughter, and they fixed it for us. Well, at least we fixed it last night, some of it.
Isn't that
nice?
Yeah, wonderful. Well, let us do a combination.
Okay, when we move to the next room, we'll eat and then go to the next room. So it'll be approximately 1 o'clock. Will anyone fall off by the wayside before 1 o'clock? Let's bow for prayer. Father, we thank thee for this day and what it has meant to us. Father, we thank thee for the day that thou hast made for us. Help us to rejoice in it. Father, I ask thee to bless those who are in attendance here, and especially Chief Custodian, your father. He is getting feeble. Ask thee to give him a staff to lean on it, to do thy will. And bless this meeting. May it be for the benefit of the Indian people. May it be in accordance to thy will. I ask all these things in thy name. Amen. Amen. Right?
It is all mine. Horrors. Let me see. We are missing a Nansemond representative today. Oliver Perry was supposed to come, and he called me just before we were to begin carpooling, saying he was down with a virus and no alternative was available. So I am in the awkward position of presiding over the meeting and also delivering Nansemond stuff on his behalf. But since I've worked closely as an ethnohistorian with the Nansemond, maybe I can do a reasonable job of that. The agenda that I sent you out and things to think about, I think we will follow that reasonably closely. But I do want to start off with a question to Helen Shearbeck that I didn't even think of when I was doing this agenda. If anybody needs other copies, I've got 6 extra copies. Yeah, please pass those around then. I printed out some more this morning. You have enough down there? Okay. Just pass those on down. I do have a question I think I ought to start off with to Helen Shearbeck and to the United Indians of America people, and it is this. It'll help us to figure out better what we are shooting for. You all have dealt much more with funding agencies than I have. When we go to a funding agency with a project, can these funding agencies be willing to allow variability from tribe to tribe in how much time is covered, how much manpower is involved, slightly different ways of collecting information? There are somewhat different tribal traditions that I've observed about working together and doing projects. Simply local traditions are going to be somewhat different. How much are the funding agencies going to allow us to do about that? Or are they going to insist that it be a monolithic project that's done absolutely the same way throughout?
If you write your proposal to address that, then it will allow you that ability. It has to be written in the proposal that way. Otherwise,
okay.
It's monolithic.
Okay.
The other thing I would add is that it seems to me, as we start our discussion, we should keep in mind that we are probably talking about several phases of projects over maybe a 1 to 3 year period. I think our most pressing concern was, as I heard you, was to try to get something that would impact the school systems. And so that is one level of getting your story told that does not have to be as detailed as another level. So I think we should keep in mind that we may be talking about 3 or 4 kinds of funds for different kinds of history. And as John says, certainly we want to write a proposal that gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you want to tell your story. And so I think out of the discussions, what we can do is try to be the technicians that will help you put that kind of a proposal together.
Probably also need to decide at what level, whether it's going to be state or federal, that you're going to address for funds for this relatively early on, because that's a rather lengthy and tedious process to accomplish.
You may have to use a combination, John, of both, depending upon, you know, the allocations and timing guidelines.
What I would suggest is that we not burden the group with that decision, that because we have worked with those kind of resources, that the group really be free to think about what they want to do, and then our job would be to really zero in on whether we should go to a state agency or a federal agency. And really, once we've got the thoughts, it is a matter then of putting it together to address those things. So I really don't think you should be burdened with that kind of decision this early.
Okay. All right. Let us start with Roman numeral 1. In dealing with the elders, because they are going to be a key to any history project, not only are we going to be talking about interviewing these folks, but without getting the approval of the elders, a tribe really cannot operate a project anyway. So you all know your elders. The logical question to begin with is, how can we reassure them that the history that they share with you and may eventually become public will not be used against the tribe later as it has been done in the past? Have you all been thinking that over, and do you have any suggestions?
Helen, I can share with you what I've received from my group as a result of Hill and the information that you shared with them. I discussed the fact of who would best fit the position, whether it would be someone within the group, someone without, outside the group, such as a university student that you mentioned. And it was overwhelming decision that it had to be an in-house situation, that they didn't feel that they wanted a stranger coming through. They also felt that there were some sensitive issues that, of course, that the tribal groups themselves would decide what information would come out of the tribal group to be shared as far as the, well, compiling all this information. So the tribe would determine what information would be fed, well, to all the sources. And it's my personal feelings that any group could select that particular information, anything that they saw that was sensitive in nature to themselves, they could control this and just keep that in their own historical records for themselves and pass all other information that were necessary out to be assimilated within the country program, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Do your folks feel that, how do I even phrase this, that they can really be assured that this will happen and then they will cooperate? You think it can really happen?
I think so, but I don't know as far as the time element is concerned.
How do you mean?
Well, I know that each group has its own particular problem. However, I asked for volunteers for the job, and to this point, I don't have volunteers. And I told them that I'd be working with them. However, that I didn't feel that I could do the complete job by myself. And I'm still trying to recruit a volunteer because some feel that, well, understand exactly what you want. And, no, they were addressing me. I think some felt somewhat incapable because they felt that they lacked information at this particular point on just what we were looking for.
Give an older person too broad of a scope, they don't really know what it is you're looking for. If you're asking them specific questions, then they might have to think on it a little while, but they will be able to then begin to percolate on the ideas. So I think that is one of the first things that you need to do is to develop some sort of an overall outline of the types of questions that you're going to ask.
Like I said, when we first started, there was a small group. And we had agreed to be taped, and we agreed to be videoed. I don't know if everybody was aware of that, and if anybody had any objections.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's looking right at
you. We're being videoed, and we also are being taped. So, and we did, as a small group, we agreed that nobody had any objection to it. But since that time, there's been, the group's doubled. So I think everybody should be aware of that.
The only question I would notice that since both of them, the monkeys and Matt and I, want to be here as listeners and observers, I think you ought to reassure them that this video would not be used.
Well, they agreed to it.
Without
they were here when we talked about it.
Okay.
Who will retain the video?
The video is Reggie Tubbins. He's the councilman for the Upper Mattapony Tribe. And what he bought it for is to do history on all Indians. This is history being made right here. That's our main thing. Is what it's going to be.
This will be part of our tribal archive. And I would be glad to share a copy with you. Something in conjunction with this. Last week, we had tribal elections, and we tried practicing interviewing a few of the people. So, you know, we have firsthand knowledge of some of the sensitive areas and some getting people willing to talk and that sort of thing. One of the big problems that I face, and Ray's son helps them, is exactly what you're saying. What questions to ask? It's not an easy thing. Johnny Carson gets paid $3 million to extract certain information from people. And after about a minute and a half into the interview, it's kind of, they're lags in there, and you can tell when you hit a kind of sensitive subject and how to get away from it. So I think we really need to develop a format of questions to lead on and develop some ability to when to let the conversation go and when how to cut it off and keep it relative. And say, that's a whole task in itself, interviewing. It's not easy.
It's an arduous procedure. Mm-hmm.
I have done training of interviewers for the Virginia Beach Maritime History Museum. So I can help with that if anybody would want to call on me. And there are others with experience also. The training of interviewers is something that should be written into a grant proposal, time allowed for meetings and that sort of thing, before anybody ever actually goes out. Likewise, the general questions to ask should also be agreed in meetings. That's something we should likewise set times and allow money for meetings to have that before interviews take place.
Exactly.
Oliver Perry, when he talked to me this morning, also said, have some sort of a questionnaire ready. So that's the Nansemann sentiment as well. As a professional ethnohistorian, it's certainly mine.
Could I just interject that maybe what would be helpful for the group at our next meeting, and I feel bad that I didn't bring it today, but I did not get back to Virginia. Let me say that as I look at this outline, I think it is a good outline, but it is a little too detailed for where we are going initially.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good way to start. And maybe what would help the group in terms of reassuring everybody is to see some of the films that other tribes have done, some of the tapes of their elders, because I can say that a couple of the tribes we work with, the interview process although folks had worked long and hard on those questions, when they started videotaping and taping elders, folks had a lot they wanted to talk about. So it was hard to keep them on that subject, and that's one of the things you'll have to worry about. And then getting you to look at films that were based on this kind of an outline plus interviews with elders, and those are more polished films because they turn things over to a filmmaker, and that filmmaker did a history of all the tribes in that state, for example. And then I had promised to bring you the curriculum to look at from North Carolina. So it might be wise to think today about your general periods as you have outlined here, but then think more about what is the first thing you want to tackle, because we can either be general or very specific, and if we get very specific, it may take you a much longer time than the product you want to see. Because as I heard the conference, one of the things that you wanted to do was impact the curriculum in the state of Virginia. And that is happening in 1990. Actually, it starts in 1989. So maybe our framework has to be, what is it we need to do to get ready to impact that curriculum in a year from now? And that gives us next year and part of 89 to get a general product ready that we could then impact the textbooks with.
I think probably what we should do is try to be as specific as possible, try to find out as much information as possible, and then edit the material to get it down on paper for form and history. But then you can always refer back to the data for as your reference point.
Well, at our next meeting, they will have experience already in some of the interviews, because you're out doing it now, and perhaps that'll get a lot of input for the other folks to build on too. More is better than less.
May I ask a question, please? Is this history that we are to produce to be a publication of history, or is it to be for interjection into curriculum, because it's an entirely different avenue in the way you would do this? If this is going to be a finished product, such as you suggested in your book of the Powhatan and Confederacy, then you're looking at different type of material. You're looking for something for publication. If you're looking for something for interjection, then I think the time frame is a much shorter one.
We just want it for our own record.
That's it, for record keeping, rather than putting out a book. And this is, from your...
We're not looking to do this in an utterly, entirely professional manner. I think the important thing now, particularly with the loss of the chief last week, is to get some of this before we lose more.
I agree.
I put all of these things in my think piece just to show you that if you absolutely went for broke immediately, this is what you'd be getting into. But the whole idea was that now that you know all that's possible to do, select sensibly, and the selection is really up to all of you. I fully expect that selections and priorities are going to be made, but I didn't want to try and guess what they would be. That's up to you. So I showed you all the things it was possible to do. I agree with Helen Schierbeck that there ought to be consideration of phases of a project. And the first phase should be aimed at the curriculum of the schools. And it will not be the kind of work that I'm doing. I wouldn't wish that on a dog, actually. It's very, very time-consuming. And also, it's very difficult to get the beastly stuff published and out to people. So probably what would be a sensible first page, first phase, and now I'm pushing you, mind you, would be to aim for the schools and do it as something fairly short term. That would be much more realistic. But the ultimate decision is yours.
The first milestone, then, you're suggesting is curriculum, something that impact curriculum.
I think that's what the conference suggests.
That's what everybody agreed was really
on the conference.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was what I think.
But I'll tell you another thing, and that is that the schools are not only going to be interested in some of the memories of the elders, the schools are also going to want to get information that allows you to connect back to Captain John Smith's time, to show that Indians have been here right on through. That is something the teachers are always curious about. And that is one of the reasons that I keep getting phone calls and letters from teachers. Do they connect? If so, how? And a certain amount of edited information going well back in time would be a good thing for all of you to figure out and then produce, to get into the curriculum. It shouldn't just be up through grandparents' and great-grandparents' memories. That's extremely useful. But Virginia history courses are taught from the beginning of Virginia's written history. And it goes back a long, long way. And it is precisely in that middle and late 17th century that the books are the least informative for students and the most prejudiced in the way that they present Indians. Now, just to complicate matters, don't think entirely about recent history. Emphasize it by all means. But there should also be made available to the school systems some historical material that goes back farther. And it should come from you, not just from me.
It would be a great boon to Virginia history for each one of the tribes to have that length. I mean, it would certainly put the proper perspective on the Indian role in from historical times and colonial times right up on the present.
Could I just ask a question and see if we think we could do this today, if there is interest? I think what would help the group, and maybe it's just me that it would help, is Helen, if you could survey the outline that you've got and just talk through the steps of history that you have seen based on your work on Virginia tribes, the book that was finished. Because I think we're all struggling for a framework in a sense. And if we could do that and just even someone take good notes, or someone, you know, I'm a blackboard board person, just because you put the big headings up and it's easy for folks to remember. But I think if we could walk through a survey, then it might help people think about, in terms of their own tribe, what they believe they could do in the way of oral history. Now, if I am pushing too fast, I think everybody should say that, but I had, in a sense, saw us trying to give a framework today to everyone, and then taking that framework and discussing each of the tribes from the framework, and then trying to move below that into agreeing on some general questions that we saw relevant for each of the tribes. And then I saw our next meeting looking at what other tribes had. And then I think by the third meeting, we'll be ready to say what we can do. You know, what you would feel comfortable doing. Because I think as we did the recognition thing, I felt we were under great pressure to produce a document. And so we took whatever people wanted to say, and we tried to put it into a framework. And then we knew enough about East Coast Indians that we could say, the framework in Virginia is similar to the framework that other Eastern Indians have had. This state is just a little further behind, except for the two reservations that they had. Now, none of us felt that that was, you know, the absolute end in history, but it was a way to get a document ready so that you had something to take to the state. And you could say to the state, this is the history as we know it and as we see it. I think we want to go a little further with this project than we were able to do with that. And I sensed at the time that had we had people like Helen working with us earlier, we could have helped you put in the survey of Virginia. What we brought to that project was our knowledge of Eastern Indians and the dates that were helpful, the dates that were problems for them, and the similarity in terms of legal problems that the Indians in the East had. But in no way did we feel that we had helped you scratch your own historical surface. There wasn't time to do that.
Basically, what I hear you saying, Helen, is that this project could really go on for the rest of all of our lives, because there's so much information available out
I would hope we'd all realize that history is a lifelong living thing. And so it is, but we're trying to get a handle on a survey of what is Virginia's history thus far, and then what the tribes want to take in that history, and either add to, correct, or rewrite. And looking at that in terms of our first level, which is impact and curriculum.
Helen, when I spoke to Dr. Baird, he said because it was the year of the Indian, 1989, if the books were not being able to be changed at that point in time, it would be nice, he said, to have some type of handbook for the children so that in that year they could have them in the schools and they could have a point of reference on Virginia Indians, he said, and it would be an avenue that we could look at.
Well, now, I wouldn't call it a book, but I certainly do see us coming out with a publication, like a supplemental teacher's guide and student's guide, even if it's just 50 pages. I do see us coming out with a product here that we can give to the schools. We can call it whatever we'd like to, you know.
I think one of the models you might want to look at, I know that the models is the curriculum that you did on North Carolina that would be very, very helpful there in Virginia, the same type of books that you came out with the series for these schools, the color books.
Do you want me to do a quick summary then of what's out
Let's
there?
Let's see what the group wants.
Oh.
Yeah. Because, I think we talked too much.
And I probably do too, and I'm not used to running meetings. I'm used to being the fly on the wall. For the Indian folks there, would you like me to give a quick summary of what would be involved in presenting a history and where the school books that I've seen so far and Virginia histories generally have fallen down and try to pinpoint some of the needs? Would that be helpful? What would you like us to do next?
I think why don't you summarize?
You want to summarize? Okay, I'll see if I can keep it short. Again, I'm going to do it chronologically. Prehistoric period. Aside from the real need for mapping archaeological sites and getting all the archaeological work done and making Randy Turner king of Virginia, one of the major things that Indian people need to tell non-Indians about the prehistoric period is that there was a long prehistory in which Indian people were living right here. It was a time in which Indian culture changed continually as the environment did and adapted very, very well to what was here. So that when the English arrived, there was already a way of life that was very well integrated with the nature of Eastern Virginia. And it was also a very complex way of life, which we are partially able to reconstruct. At least I've been trying it in my ethnography book. But the public needs to be made aware that there really is a prehistory out there, not just giving them dates. 10,000 years is a nice off-the-wall date. But there was cultural change going on and continual adaptation by people who were intelligently thinking about what they were doing. And that is something that the books don't usually recognize. School children would be very interested in this. And we've actually divided up into phases the prehistoric period, and it's fairly easy to get it across in really basic terms to high school and elementary school teachers. So that's the prehistoric period. The early historic period, again, we can do a reasonably good reconstruction on what Indian culture was like. The original sources have been published. They are reasonably accessible to textbook writers, and the textbooks that I have seen have to do a quickie job, and these days they're not half bad. The place that the books tend to fall down in the 17th and early 18th centuries is not so much in Indian culture as it is they emphasize Indian warfare. And the date that they tend to seize upon is that uprising of 1622. It's always described as the massacre of 1622. And thereafter, they usually drop the subject of Indians. because the Indians were pushed back after that time. It took 10 years to do it, and they don't ever bring that in either. But they tend to say that Indians diminished after that time, diseases, wars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they make it sound as if it's slightly sad, but it's absolutely inevitable, and it was done by superior English culture, which doesn't happen to be the case. If you've got a culture that's already well adapted here, then an outsider's culture adapted for latitude 50 north is not going to be superior necessarily. So we need to present, I think, some other things in the early historic period. We need to show first that Indian culture persisted throughout the 17th century and only changed well into the 18th century. It was well grafted onto Eastern Virginia, and it only took absolutely horrendous population changes to make the culture change.